Good morning, friends. My name is Ken M. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ken.
My sobriety date is the 17th of November of 1997. My home group is the Easy Does It group. It meets Sundays, 5 o'clock in Vacaville. The Alano Club, come see us. So this morning, my heart is absolutely brimming with gratitude, resulting in that finest emotion that any human could know. That's outgoing love. Love for all you guys who showed up this morning early for self-support. You guys are the choir. If you came to hear folks talk about money at this early hour at the International Convention, thank you for being here. I'd like to thank Eva for the loving invitation to talk to you folks today about self-support, seventh tradition. And a little bit of my background, probably why they chose me for this, is I had the incredible experience of serving as the Panel 61 delegate from the California Northern Coastal Area 06. And as a delegate, I served on the Finance Committee at the conference for a couple of years, and the second year I was the alternate chair of that committee, and it was an amazing experience for someone like me. I learned an awful lot. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned about the spiritual principle involved with self-support. And, you know, I was never a huge numbers guy coming, but I was always kind of interested in this whole how does money and spirituality mix in AA. And I'll tell you a little bit about that, what I learned in a moment. So the other thing I learned is when I show up every day in Alcoholics Anonymous with an open heart and an open mind and remain teachable, I can learn something new every day. I'm still learning. So thank you. A little bit about my story. I have to qualify a little bit, I believe. So as brief as I can be is I drank like a pig. I ruined my life. And that, you know, it was to the point of desperation that dying looked like a reasonable option by the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this time. And that's not a good place for anybody to be. But, you know, I thank God that that's was where I was at, because that made me willing to do what you guys told me I had to do if I wanted to stay sober. So some of that stuff you told me that I had to do if I wanted to stay sober was to get a sponsor, work the steps, and find a job in Alcoholics Anonymous. And to me, commitment has been the biggest thing in AA for me. It's made me show up when I'm fine and my head tells me I'm okay. I don't need to get off the couch watching the Giants game and being comfortable and go down to the jail and do a meeting, go secretary, go make coffee, whatever it was. That's what's kept me coming and involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. So one of the largest motivators for me when I came to AA this time had to do with finances. You know, I was coming off of divorce from my first marriage, and I had all that shame, guilt, and remorse that we can do, and it was all my fault. And I just told my wife that, you know, you go get the lawyer, you go take care of all that stuff, I'll sign whatever. And in hindsight, that was probably a pretty bad thing for me to do. When all was said and done, I signed all these papers, and now I got alimony, child support, child care, and this huge, you know, most folks come up with assets when they sell their house and all that. I had a huge debt. So I'm looking at, you know, $2,400 worth of this stuff, $20,000 and 20% interest. I'm like, I'm going to be eating bologna sandwiches three times a day for the rest of my life and working to pay this thing off. So I was staying sober. I was going to meetings, but I wasn't very happy, and I was complaining everywhere I went. I'm so broke, I can't afford to pay attention. I was just putting the minimum in the basket when it would go around, and I was complaining about it all the time. And a fella came up to me after a meeting one day, and his name was Frankie P. And Frank was a past delegate, and I had no clue what a delegate was. And, you know, he wasn't some guy who ran around telling us what he was. But he says, you know, Ken, are you having money troubles? Is that what I'm hearing you talking about? I said, Frank, you know, I'm going to be broke forever. I got this huge mountain of debt. I'm never going to get out of here. And Frank went on to tell me that I needed to start doubling up my contributions in the seventh tradition basket. If I put a dollar in every day, he said, you need to start putting in $2. I'm like, didn't you hear what I said? I'm broke. He goes, you trust me on this one. You just start. And then he went on to tell me about paradoxes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have quite a few: surrender to win, forgive to be forgiven, got to give it away to keep it. And Frank said, that one applies to money as well. And I liked Frank enough, and I trusted him enough to listen to what he said, and I started doing that. another way that it was explained to me back in those days by Frank and other folks is, it's not your money anyway. This is God's money. This is how God gets stuff done in this world. So I might work for Coney Elevator Company, but they're not the source of my income. They're not the source of my income. They're just the channel that this currency flows to me. And my job is to keep the current moving. And I recently learned the currency comes from the Latin word meaning current, to flow. So my job is to keep it flowing. And I have choices today where I can keep that flow going. You know, I have obviously responsibilities that I take seriously nowadays. I have a family. I take care of the, you know, the housing, the shelter, and the fun stuff that we all like to do. But then I get to this point where I still have a little bit, and I have this spirit of giving that you folks have taught me. And I got to figure out how I'm going to put that spirit of giving to the best use. You know, and everybody does it differently. You know, we can contribute to church. We can contribute to political causes that we're feel strongly about. We can contribute to charitable organizations. I tend to do that when there's a disaster in the world. I'll open my wallet and that sort of thing. But to me, the biggest thing that I want to contribute is the thing that saved my life, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because today, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know what membership means to you guys, but to me, it means I want to support this thing, and not only through service, but financially as well. You know, one of the things I heard at the conference that has stuck with me through these years is we might not have dues or fees in AA, but it is not free. Meeting rooms cost money. Coffee costs money. Sending your GSR to assemblies costs money. And I think that, you know, we're never real comfortable talking about money in AA, and I think we're going to have to get over that, and we're going to have to get over it pretty quick. Things are going on. So I trusted Frank. I took his suggestions, and just like he said, I get back 10 times whatever it is, whether it's service effort, money effort. Today, I can tell you absolutely that the fear of economic insecurity has left me. The promises have come true for me in that aspect and many other aspects of my life as a result of doing that stuff. Today, I got everything I need. I'd like to switch gears a little bit now and talk more about AA as a whole, about finances in AA. And I got into general service when I was 5 years sober. And I was a new GSR, and I went to my first Pacific Regional Forum in Phoenix, Arizona in 2002. You know, and I was confused, didn't know what was going on. And I went to the finance presentation, and the general manager of the office at that time gave that presentation. And he said some things in there that just like blew me away. I'd never heard this stuff before. And it's stuff that most AA members never get the opportunity to hear. You know, I'm going to give you two numbers. I don't want to give you a whole bunch of numbers, but these are the numbers that stuck with me. And these are the numbers that are today's current stuff. Back then they were a little bit less, but for $7 per member per year, we could be selling big books for what they cost to make. $7 per member. That seems pretty minuscule when you think about it in those terms. The other number is 42.5. That is the percentage of groups of all the groups registered in the U.S. and Canada who contribute to the General Service Board. 42%. So there's 57.5% who are missing out on that spiritual connection that comes with being a part of this fellowship. 57% give nothing. That number amazed me. You know, and we have, you know, lots of things going on in groups today. Rents are going up. Groups are having to buy insurance. Coffee costs more. All those sort of expenses. But I don't care how poor your group is. You could have a group conscience to say, we want to be a participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're going to get together once a year and write out a check to the General Service Board, to the intergroup, to the district, to the area. Even if it's for $1. You're making that spiritual connection for $1. And maybe you can have the same experience I did. If you start small, maybe it'll get bigger. But so many folks are missing that connection. So on the finance committee when I was a delegate, I learned mostly about the spiritual aspect of self-support. You know, in that meeting last night, I was moved to tears almost a couple of times by the spiritual stuff that I felt in that meeting. And I thought about, how does this sort of stuff happen? It doesn't happen unless we are making those contributions. That's what the spiritual connection is for me. Where did I go? So the seventh tradition in the short form says every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. So every AA group, I think that certainly includes the big group, all of us. AA as a whole should be self-supporting. I have a friend that throws this quote out there quite a bit, and I asked him if I could use it, and he said, "Oh, please do." But he likes to say, "You can't ask others to observe all 12 traditions if you pick and choose which ones you're observing." So all of those traditions are so important so we can get together and celebrate Alcoholics Anonymous after 80 years. But what about that seventh one? Is that perhaps the least observed of all those 12 traditions? Ask yourself. Is AA truly self-supporting? So every year, we make a budget and we get this amount of expenses delivered to the fellowship that they'd asked for. And every year we get this amount of contributions from the members and the groups. There's a $2 million gap every year. How do we make up the difference in that gap? Profits from literature sales. This is a really good system. It has worked for a really, really long time to pay that difference. But my question is the good the enemy of the best in this case? Are we truly self-supporting? A lot of those books go to other places. Hopefully they all end up in the hands of alcoholics and they do some good, but is that truly self-supporting? There are those who are going to say always that we need to slash expenses. We need to learn to live within our means. And I agree with that totally. We need to learn to live within our means, so we either have to increase our means or cut something. Concept 11, Bill talked a lot about money. He said, in AA, there are two schools of thought. The spenders say, never mind the money, let's get at it. And the savers say, stop, look, listen. Bill goes on to say that we should scrutinize every considerable expense. Is it necessary, desirable, now? Can we afford it? All considered. And in my humble opinion, I think that the conference have made some decisions in the last few years that didn't consider, can we afford it? The safe course, Bill goes on to say, the safe course usually lies between reckless budget slashing and imprudent spending. My next question for you guys is why would we not want to be self-supporting through contributions? Why would we not want to do that? That was Bill's vision. I mean, when you read Bill's writings, Bill always thought that someday the fellowship would support itself through contributions. And it's never happened. I mean, there was a time back in the 50s it looked like it kind of happened, but it hasn't even been close for a long time, I'm afraid. So the next question, what is going to happen to our good system relying on these profits from literature sales as our world around us changes? The whole publishing industry is changing. The way people read and get information is changing. How long are we going to be able to count on that $2 million? Or are we going to be selling big books for $50 because we need to keep raising the level? AA has tried to keep up. We have a lot of digital offerings in our literature nowadays, but digital books last a long time compared to my big book that wears out and gets dropped in the bathtub and all that. So in my opinion, that like everything we do in AA, communication is going to be the key to changing what we got going on here. We need to talk about this sort of stuff. Concept 12, Warranty 2, one of my favorite things to start talking about when we start talking about money in AA. Bill talks exclusively about finance, and Bill says, in AA, we do not beg for money. All we do is simply show where the need is through right information and education, and we portray what their service dollars bring in terms of steering alcoholics to AA, how countless alcoholics and their families have helped. This is what we do. We show people where the money goes, and we say, do you want to support this? And Bill says, most of the time, folks respond. So if it's just a matter of right information, getting it out to the fellowship, how do we do that? In my area, we decided that we wanted to put all this information in one spot so you could find it. I mean, there's a lot of information on the AA.org website, but in CNCA, we said, let's put it all together and give a tool to the GSRs, the DCMs, the folks in our area who are interested in this sort of information. So they can, you know, get their information on their tablets, their phones, whatever, and we'll make it real convenient for them. But how do we let them know where it's at? Then we come up with the idea of, let's get out these little cards, and we put a little cute saying on there, like, self-supporting alcoholics, whoever heard of such a thing? And a few questions about, you know, maybe you don't know some of this stuff, but if you'd like to know more, go to cnca06.org. Go to the finance tab. Go to the self-support challenge. And it's all right there, all this information in one spot. And I brought a bunch of these cards with you, and I hope everybody comes up here and gets one. And you go back to your districts and areas and talk about this stuff. When we first looked at putting this on our website, I went to 93 area websites to see how many areas talk about finance. Very few. Some. And a lot of it is area-specific numbers or links right to GSO. So we thought this might be a good... Am I getting close? I got time. We thought this might be a good way to just give the tools out there so folks have a way to better communicate. There's a link on there to SMF176, and Bill talked about right education and information. That's where you want to start, because it's a 13-page document that tells you where all your money is being spent, what your service dollar is buying. Something that my sponsor and I talk about quite a bit is a personal contribution plan. And we all have one, whether we know it or not. You have something in the back of your mind when you go to an AA meeting of how you're going to contribute at that meeting. And, you know, my sponsor and I have developed our own. And I'll just share mine with you, that when I'm going to your meeting, I'm going to put $2 or $3 in the basket. Because I know you got to pay the rent, and I know you got to keep the lights turned on, and I know a dollar isn't even nowhere close enough to do that anymore. I don't go to your business meeting, so I am not sure where all the extra money is going there, but I want your meeting to survive and exist so I can go to it when I can. Now, when I go to my home group, I go to the business meetings. I pay attention to what the treasurer says, where our money is being distributed. So I'm much more generous in my home group, knowing that we're contributing to all those other service entities. I'm aware that the district and the area need finances as well. When I go to an area assembly, I know that it costs roughly $20 per person in attendance. So I know what my share of that should be. You know, I can do the math when I go to a meeting room and I know they're paying $30 and there's only 10 of us sitting in a room, how much my share would be. The General Service Board, and you know, we talk about contributions to the office. We make contributions to New York. We make contributions to the General Service Board. The board is who we write the check to. The board is who has the responsibility to do with that money as they've been directed by the conference. And there's different ways to contribute to the General Service Board. When I was a new GSR, my delegate, Suzanne Moore, bless her heart, was on the Finance Committee. And Suzanne talked about the birthday plan everywhere she went all the time. Suzanne ingrained it into me that this is one way that we can support the fellowship. And, you know, if everybody made full use of the birthday plan, again, we'd be selling big books for what they cost us to print. Nowadays, we have online contributions. You can make your birthday donation. You go online. It takes about 5 minutes to set up an account. You can make a reoccurring contribution. I just did this about a year ago, so now there's a small amount of money is taken off my credit card every month. I never miss it. I don't see it. And then I don't have to worry about writing checks and remember to do all that sort of stuff. And it's so easy if you choose to do that. In my opinion, there are some hard decisions coming for Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to have to start communicating better about self-support through contributions. We can get that conversation started right now, right here in this room, me and you. I'm really interested, if we have time, to hear some of you guys' thoughts on this, what you think we could do to get this conversation started. Thank you for allowing me to share.
All right. Thanks, Ken. That was excellent. You know, he brings up a lot of good points, but how many of your groups contribute to GSO? It's a lot more than 42%. That's great. Of course, he's saying the choir is here. I'll tell you a funny story about self-support. We were had this preliminary planning meeting for the 2008 Florida State Convention, and somebody come up with this idea, hey, why don't we hand out them little bags, you know, those plastic bags that some people use for other things, and we fill them up with sand and let people know we're going to be at the hotel on the beach. And I said, that sounds great. And I thought, you know what, wait a minute, we can't just go ask them to use their sand. So listen to this crazy idea. I says, you know what, let me go over to Home Depot. I bought 5 bags of sand, and I went over to the hotel Sunday morning, so it wasn't, you know, too obvious. And so I told them, I says, listen, we want to trade our 5 bags of sand for, you know, basically 5 bags of sand from you, a couple barrels full of, or buckets full of them. And the guy says, you want to do what? And looks at me, and I explain the 7 tradition. He's like, hang on a minute. And he calls up the general manager. He says, these guys want to trade the sand. And she says, is there anything to do with the turtles? You know, the turtles in Florida are a big deal. And, no turtles. And he said, all right, but do you mind going down to the edge of the property so the rest of the people won't see us? This is the rest of the story. She says, go down to the end of the property. So I went down in there, and I backed the truck up. I happen to have a turtle plate on my truck. And I'm backing up, and I'm back by these 3 guys working there. And so I get out, and I start ripping these bags open, and they ask, can we help you? And I said, yeah, well, Mr. Johnson said we could trade our sand for your sand. And he kind of looks at me like, okay. Well, Mr. Johnson said that. So they helped me unload them and scooped up the 2 buckets of sand, and away we went. So we put their sand in our little envelopes to hand out as for the bid on the convention, and it was awesome. And so, but we were honoring the 7th tradition. That's a funny little story. So, but if you think that you can't support yourself, you can. Just, you know, ask for help and just think outside the box sometimes. But without further ado, that's enough out of me. We'll move on to Sharon. Sharon's going to blast us with some great information. Here she comes.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Sharon. I'm alcoholic. I guess I want to start by thanking Eva, who's not here, for her loving invitation to be at this meeting. I have to tell you that if you don't know the process for picking a lot of our speakers, the delegates are invited to submit names about September, October, some of that time frame. And I very carefully did not include my name. So I don't know where this came from. But anyway, I'm here, and I think I'm probably going to live through it. I was grateful this morning. I did not come look at the room. I was so grateful when I walked in and saw that it's a kind of a small and intimate group. I think I'm going to be okay. I'm going to talk to you about, tell you my story and kind of try to weave the self-support stuff into it. I love the fact that our, all of our, the steps and the traditions and the concepts are principles. So probably more talk about principles than the 7th tradition itself. So I'll just start by telling you, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for about 4.5 years, coming to meetings. I saw how many people were putting money in the basket. You know how crazy I was. You probably know what I was doing and what I wasn't doing. I didn't have a sponsor. You know, I had an affair with a married man, and then in between, you know, you aren't with those guys all the time, so you got to have some, you know. All I can tell you about that is that, you know, those times and those, you know, that's kind of what got me to meetings for 4.5 years was the men. So, and then one came along that I was pretty interested in, and there was this woman that was in my very first meeting, and I've been watching her for 4.5 years, but she's pretty serious, you know. She really was, she loves Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's always piling a bunch of women in her car going someplace, and it's way too much for me. Because I'm busy on the weekends, you know. And so, but I thought if I got her for a sponsor, it would be good on my dating resume. So little did I know, you know, that she was going to take me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps. So what happened, you know, in those early years is that I just thought if I stopped drinking, I would be okay. And I was not okay. The only difference, I'd gotten to a place, I think the only difference for me was that I was Oops, I forgot to hit the start button. Anyway, I just wasn't drinking, but I was just doing all the same stuff. And I just got more and more miserable. So I think I was kind of at the same place that I had been, you know, when I got to AA, except that I wasn't drinking. So we started through the book. And so in that process, I found for myself, as the steps, and certainly the big book for me showed me, I found myself. I found out what is wrong with me. What is wrong with me? I've been calling myself an alcoholic for 4.5 years, but I didn't know what that meant. And so in that process, I found out, you know, first of all, what it meant. And thank God I found out what it meant, because I think it got that out of that came some desperation of it. There's only one thing for me to do, and that's to do the rest of the steps and to do whatever else. Like I said, she's an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, so you just kind of, I'm kind of like a little duckling, you know, quack, quack, I will follow her around. And, yeah. She was chairing the meeting next door, so I could kind of hear her voice through the wall when Ken was talking. Very comforting to know she was next door. Changed my life. So, but, you know, in the process, of course, of, you know, getting to learn, know myself, is that I found that I had these things that I thought were assets that were defects. And, you know, and, so self-reliance. So to kind of go back a little bit to, in my, you know, to say my, you know, the, how I, where I came from, you know, is that, my father was born in, my home group is the Howe Group in Bozeman, Montana. Got a couple home group members here. I was born in Butte, Montana. I don't know if you've ever heard of Butte, but it's a very special place. So I'm a Montana girl. And but my dad was 60 years old when I was born, and my mom was almost 40. So, and I was his, well, both of their really, their first children that they really got to parent. I think my dad had a few others before me, but he didn't get to parent them. Pretty wild and crazy man in Butte, but you know, I don't think my dad was alcoholic. I think he just was a good, hard Butte drinking man, hard drinker, hard working man, you know. But they, you just can imagine that I just was spoiled and loved to death. But my mom got sick when I was 4, and things kind of weren't so good from there, you know. They just couldn't take care of me anymore, so I went into extended family, and it wasn't so good there, you know. Some things happened that shouldn't happen to a little girl. And, you know, and I know that this doesn't, that's not why I'm alcoholic. I believe I was born, I'm one of those. I believe I was born alcoholic. I think I was alcoholic in my last life, and I just needed to play it out in this one. So I came in needing a drink. And this just, you know, I just had these reasons, you know, that, but I was, you know, very uncomfortable in my life. But it also, you know, people react to stuff like that in one way or another. And in my way, you know, my way of that is that it was self-reliance. So that, in a way, for many years was kind of an asset, you know, is that I am going to take care of myself, because I can't trust anybody else to take care of myself. I don't believe in God. You know, I am going to take care of myself. And then I get to a place, you know, where I'm not taking care of myself. No wonder I'm scared to death. You know, I'm taking care of myself, you know, but I understand that now, but I sure didn't understand that then. You know, that was no wonder you always wonder whether the next shoe's going to drop, you know, whatever's going to happen. So, and it was a long, you know, I was 41 when I got sober, so I spent a long time, you know, drinking hard and looking for other solutions. You know, there's this dishonesty related to that, too, because I pretend like I'm, you know, I put on this strong woman, independent facade, but I need somebody to take care of me. So financially, I've always taken care of myself because I'm not going to be in debt to anybody. I'm not going to have anybody take care of me financially. I'm going to pay the bills. I'm going to have a good job. But emotionally, I'm just totally dependent, you know. So the stuff I always find out in the steps. And begin to get, you know, that there are some things I need to do that can be different. That self-esteem thing, same thing, you know, is that I look like I try to be better than I am. I try to think that I'm better than I am. This self-reliance thing for me turns out to be, you know, one of the way it manifests is that I am a miser. I'm a cheapskate. I don't, you know, I got to hold on to my money. I got to take care because I got to take care of myself. And so it's been a long process. That's the other yet. I remembered to thank Eva, but I didn't tell you that I've been sober since July 17th of 1985. So. So. Long, slow process. I think I'm pretty smart. Pretty slow. I'm pretty slow to learn these kinds of spiritual, emotional kinds of things. I can't remember when. I don't. Oh, well. It, yeah. Okay. My sponsor told me one of the things I should talk about, you know, is work. And so I worked I retired with 25 years of service. And so about half of that time I was a drunk, I was, you know, but I am so dishonest that I can make people think everything's okay, you know. But the other half was in the program with the steps, with recovery. And about that, someplace in there, something happened. There was a reorganization. And those first years, 12 years, it was always like, you owe me more money. I'm a female. I'm not being paid equitably. I think I'm going to sue you. I mean, nothing was ever right. I was never treated right. I never was respected for what my contribution, all of this stuff. And then about the time sometime after I did my fifth step, there was a reorganization. And so I said to this man, you know, and I don't even know, where did this come from? I'm walking down the hall and I said, you know, that looks really interesting to me. If you think that I could be useful in your organization, would you consider me? He said, okay. You know, and I don't know, a week later or something like that, he came back. He said, you know, I really would like you to work for me. And so he said, there isn't any more money in this. It's a lateral move. And so, you know, we did the move. And then about 2 weeks later he comes, he said, I made a mistake with that. There was a promotion. And that's kind of the way my life is gone. You know, when I stop trying to force you money stuff, it just opens up. And it's been, you know, that happened to me with the basket. You know, when I started putting more money in the basket, how does it happen that I have more money in my checkbook? It doesn't make any sense to me, you know, but it is that spirit of generosity, you know, and like I said, to take that, what at one point was an asset, because I think my self-reliance got me a long way when I was young, you know, and then as alcoholism got worse and I got worse, you know, that, you know, I always loved alcohol, always loved, you know, what it did for me. I always had that physical reaction, you know, when I'm going to take one drink, it's just hard to say how many more, where I'm going to end up, what I'm going to do, when I'm going to get home, you know, who I was with, what, all that stuff. But for me, part of the progression of the disease was that the mental part, and that just kept getting, you know, worse and worse and worse, how I saw the world and how much I had to manage and control the world and the harm I caused and all that. So, I don't know, I kind of went off on a little thing there, but it's just about that defect of self-reliance and my fear and having God slowly, I don't know that it gets removed. You know, I still have some self-reliance. I still have some financial insecurity, but I don't have to act on it so much anymore. I said, oh no, this isn't right. Look at what's happened to me in my life that I am taken care of. I've always been taken care of. So, and that is, you know, that has just kind of continued in my sobriety. I can't, you know, I was able to retire pretty young after, you know, having being a participating for half of my life, half of my employment, I'd say when I was sober and working the steps, not before that, because I don't think I was such a great contributor before that, but sober working the steps. I think I was a really good employee and a contributor to my my organization. I've talked about money, but that principle of self-support. So it isn't. I'm not just stingy with my money. I'm stingy with my time. Well, kind of like I said, you know, she's driving around, putting a bunch of women in her car and going to these AA things, you know, and I got important stuff to do with my time on the weekends. You know, I got stuff, important stuff to do. I won't tell you what they were, but you can imagine. So I start to give a little bit of my time. Oh, maybe I can, you know, maybe I can stay for that business meeting. You know, maybe my life isn't so important that I can't go do some AA thing on a weekend, that I can't reach out to help somebody. So I, you know, I begin to learn that kind of a little bit of generosity in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then it rolls out into the rest of my life where I can remember I made an amend to this man that I worked with, and he asked me, he said, well, can we just have a cup of coffee once in a while? Because we had been really close, and then something I didn't like about him, I just cut him off. That's my deal, you know. Can we just have a cup of coffee once in a while? Well, then he called me and asked me for a cup of coffee, and it's like, I'm too busy. I can't do it. You know, and I told my sponsor, he said, oh, Sharon, because that's the way I am. I'm just so busy and so important that I can't make time for you either. And that's kind of been like a later thing in my sobriety of that principle of generosity with myself, you know, not just on Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, in my life. So, you know, that time thing and being willing in Alcoholics Anonymous has been a wonderful gift for me. I think it's, you know, kind of like Ken talked about the opportunity to serve at different levels and always doing something that I didn't think I could do. The last, I rotated off as a delegate, and for 2 years prior to that, I was like, I don't think I can do this. I'm aging, and I don't think I have the, I don't have the energy. Montana's a big state, and the way we get around there are 14 trips, and I put 6,000 miles in my car. I know that's not much, but for some people for the California people, but they're long trips, you know, and I don't think I have the energy to do that. And it's like, okay, well, maybe I could be willing to do that. I use that key of Don's, and maybe, maybe God knows whether I can do this or not. And I find that I have the resources that I don't even know that I have to be able to do those kinds of things. Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah. So I know I'm kind of skipping all over here. This happened when I was thinking. I try not to think about when I'm going to talk because it's like my head was. But I did so much want to talk, you know, focus on, or have some focus anyway, on the seventh tradition. So that there's another little flip side. I want to talk about the principle of self-support. That's kind of been a big one for me, maybe, and I don't know how the last how many years. And this I'm still learning, is that being one who likes to fix things and take care of things, and I have learned that I do things for people, financially or otherwise, that they really can do for themselves. And so when I take that principle of self-support and realize that, oh, if I'm doing things, if I'm not allowing someone to do, have, to be self-supporting financially, emotionally, make the coffee, suffer the consequences of forgetting to open the meeting on time, you know, all those things that I'm always trying to prevent people from making mistakes, you know, because what, you know, the world's going to blow up if it isn't right. But that when I do that, that I'm preventing them from having their own spiritual experience, from their them being self-supporting and in what emotionally, physically, or financially. So that's kind of been a big one for me to see that truth about myself and to be able to try to let people have their own experience in this way, to be self-supporting in whatever, you know, way it is. And then I want to just touch, Ken talked about the birthday plan. We have someone in our district who told me about this a while ago, and I try to do it. So he participates in the birthday plan. Does everybody know what the birthday plan is? Oh, okay. So GSO produces a little envelope, and so on your birthday, you can contribute a year, a dollar, for every year that you're sober. You can contribute it to the GSO, to send it to GSO. So I participate in the birthday plan. And, but then it was brought up, well, I could do the same thing for my district. I can do the same thing for my group. And I do that. We don't have intergroups I shouldn't say that. We do have two, but I don't have an intergroup in my district. Montana's small. We operate almost exclusively in the general service structure without intergroups. They supplement a little bit in two locations. So that's my deal with the birthday plan, and I'm going to close with for many, many years, in the morning, I've read Emmett Fox, Around the Year. Around the Year with Emmett Fox. I don't know if anybody of you. So there's an excerpt from this morning's reading that I want to close with. Remember that this call is the call of God. And when God calls you to his service, he pays all the expenses. Whatever you may require to answer that call, all will he furnish. If you be about his business and not your own. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sharon. That is excellent. That's if you guys haven't heard about Emmett Fox, Around the Year, it's the best meditation book in the world, in my opinion, but that doesn't count. Wait a minute. I'm not a delegate anymore, right? When you rotate out as when you're the delegate, you're not supposed to have an opinion according to certain, tradition or whatever. But Since I've rotated out, I can now say some. Right, Gary? Well, you know, I did have one of our best archive friends is Bruce W., and he's always, I don't want to say harping on this, but he says, it's not donations, it's contributions. You're part of AA. You contribute to your group. You don't donate to some outside goodwill. You contribute to your group. And I'm like, all right, Bruce, calm down. No, I'm not going to calm down. Because it's important to notice the distinction. You're supporting yourselves, and that's pretty cool. Without further ado, I'm going to bring up Marita. She's going to knock it out of the park for us as our last speaker. So come on up, Marita.
My name is Marita, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Marita.
Hi, gang. I'm really grateful that you're here and that you're still awake. Since we didn't have any idea who was going to share the panel with us, there was no way we could talk about what we were going to talk about to get ourselves organized, and so you're going to hear things more than once. Fortunately, I learn slowly, and I need to hear more than once. My sobriety date is November 1st, 1981. My home group is the Boulder Basics Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Boulder City, Nevada. Meets on Mondays and Thursdays. Come join us. We'd love to have you. I'd like to thank my friend Eva and the GSO staff for the opportunity to share. I think it's interesting she picked four past delegates to talk about money. Obviously, she said we had to, you know. My topic is the seventh tradition in AA and how it relates to your home group and mine. At the end of my first AA meeting, an announcement was made. We have no dues or fees, but we have expenses. A basket was passed. In the basket was a lot of $1 bills, so I put one in as well. Nothing was said about what kind of expenses we had, and there was no indication that you could put anything more or less in. So I learned that when the basket or the hat is passed, that at an AA meeting, and AA members put in a buck and now two, they're observing the seventh tradition by contributing to AA's self-support. Simply put, the seventh tradition means that our fellowship pays its own way. It doesn't solicit or accept contributions from governments, corporations, or charitable institutions, and it caps donations from individuals at $3,000 a year. There were 21 people last year that were willing to do that for AA. It neither lavishly spends nor raises money, and it doesn't try to amass wealth. Many groups, like mine, meet in an AA church hall, not because the acoustics are superior, but because we're getting a bargain on the rent. We can't afford to go anywhere else. The very growth of AA and the size of the average group are the primary factors behind this necessity. By the same token, our expenses mount. Heat, light, insurance, and some instances are all expenses. The increasing demand for AA literature has now become a factor for some groups. The groups share the expense of the local central office, the area central committee, and the general service office. They have to be accounted in the overall budget. In addition, some groups buy chips so they can, you know, celebrate milestones for their members, and additionally, some groups even will buy subscriptions of the Grapevine for their newcomers. All these expenses are a cost to the group. Even refreshments end up to be an expense, but we pay our own way. This isn't how it was in the early days. In the beginning, money looked like a really good thing to a lot of our members, including our co-founder, Bill W. Bill had tremendous energy, drive, and ambition on behalf of this budding fellowship, but he was also susceptible to visions of grandeur. When he wrote about self-will run riot, he was speaking from the heart. The long form of this tradition provides with in-depth clarity precisely what Tradition 7 encompasses and is meant to accomplish it. So, since this is a meeting about the seventh tradition, I will now read the long form. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by their voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of AA is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies. The acceptance of large gifts from any source or contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. That's the long form, and it leaves little room as to what the tradition is about. I think self-support is about having groups' contributions provide all the funds needed for all the services in keeping AA active and alive, attractive, growing, spiritual, and democratic. By broadening the base of the group self-support, that is, by increasing the contributions per member, as well as the number, the percentage of groups contributing to a self-supporting level, then we can be assured that our services will be provided. From a spiritual standpoint, self-support can help us avoid the corrupting influences that come from establishing dues, fees, relying on outside donations, or resorting to the sale of our program for profit and personal gain. So long as we rely on our group contributions and we can limit the amount of the individual contributions, the problems associated with perilous wealth and authoritative powers will not erode our unity or effectiveness. Self-support not only avoids corrupting influences, it includes principles that contribute to our spiritual growth, such as self-respect, freedom to express our feelings as well as to question our motives, without the fear of retribution or worrying over loss of principal funds. It fosters the justice and the sense of fairness that comes from voluntarily sharing the costs according to our own abilities and our conscience. With each of us doing our part, the principle of group autonomy is automatically practiced and protected. Self-support gives us a sense of belonging, and it gives us a sense of satisfaction of being a part of a fellowship which we help to foster and nourish. It brings serenity my soul through doing my share. The action helps me help others, and at the same time produces a positive influence on the destiny of our future. Self-support makes for prudence through the exercise of reason and the skill in the management of our practical financial affairs. Our preamble says that we are self-supporting through our own contributions. Rarely have our group contributions lived up to having us have the right to make that statement. Our group contributions fail to meet our budget, and then we have to rely on the literature sales to make up the deficit. I don't think anyone actually seriously argues with the wisdom of the policy of being self-supporting through own contributions, and we're all familiar with the AA history, in the beginning frustrated by the lack of funds to carry the message, to extend the hand of AA wherever it was needed. We hope to get outside help from outside the fellowship. That we failed was really a blessing in disguise. But the idea of self-support implies more than just financial self-sufficiency. How often we've heard the words from the podium, but the most devastating of all was the loss of self-respect. Wouldn't it be devastating to the fellowship of AA if we were to lose our self-respect and our self-determination because in our apathy we became less self-supporting? Moreover, this policy has gained for us the respect of non-AAs everywhere, even though sometimes it baffles them. Actually, sometimes it seems to baffle me too, and other groups that I've visited, because they don't seem to even follow our own policy ourselves. I'm sure you can think of lots of examples where we've had car bake sales and car washes for good causes. It's sad to note that in a truer sense, many of our groups are not self-supporting because they're not even contributing to AA as a whole. I contacted GSO and got the figures that'll come out in this year's final conference report, and the numbers are down yet again. We're down to now 41% of groups contributing. The average group contribution is $4.23. That's per group. To be self-supporting, we need $7.08 per member. I have a chart with me if you'd like to see what your area is doing throughout the U.S. and Canada to see how you're matching up with the rest of us and whether you're close to self-supporting yet. Each year, less groups contribute to GSO, and therefore, less groups are self-supporting. The services provided by GSO to help us carry the message are ongoing. Every AA group receives equal service from the New York office, whether they contribute or not. But I do believe that there is sufficient evidence that indicate that when groups are informed about the need, they usually step up. So maybe our problem isn't that we don't self-support, it's that we don't talk about the need. I think right now maybe the conference ought to think about focusing their attention on the real problem, getting the 58.4% non-contributing groups to help carry their share of the AA's expenses, as we state in the preamble. Being self-supporting can come because it's sensitive to our understanding of the meaning of love and service. It can help us become more responsible in our approach to unity and recovery. It can strengthen us in the conviction that concerns for us are important, not only for our own group, but for the groups yet to come. Bill Wilson once, in October 67 Grapevine article, said, "Our support of services actually amounts to a recognition of our part that AAs everywhere must function at full strength, and that without the tradition of self-support, we need to foot the bill." At a sharing session as back as far as March of 1996, the board was already talking about the lack of participation by more and more groups. This is not a recent problem for us. It's gone on for a very long time. George D., a retired general manager, said that the whole process of the member putting money in the basket, the group taking care of its expenses, and then through a group conscience, determining how it can pay for the needed AA services that can't be extended by the individual group acting alone. This is the spiritual process basic to our personal recovery and to our traditions. Past trustee Julian R. suggested some of the reasons why a smaller percentage of groups are participating. For example, downswings in the economy and overall drop in membership. Now remember, this was 96. We're still saying the same today. He also wondered, do sponsors still point out the importance of a home group in instilling the sense of responsibility and commitment to newcomers? He then stated that when he was newly sober, self-support was explained as being important to both my personal recovery and to my home group that I attend. We need to do a better job at getting across the understanding of the critical importance of paying our way. Money's not an easy topic for AA members, and me included. But I've discovered over the years that Tradition 7 is a lot more than just money. It's about self-worth. It's about spirituality. It's about fear. It's faith, control, sacrifice, power, prestige, and money. Sobriety can't be bought. There's no strings attached, and no one's required to contribute any money to AA. Yet it's clear that self-support enhances self-respect. Self-support isn't just a matter of dollars and cents. It's also about a willingness to participate. Making a contribution is the act that affirms the importance of our unity, responsibility, and our commitment to our common cause. Our common welfare, sorry. When a newcomer came to my home group, we let them know that they're not obliged to put money in the basket. We also make sure that all who attend our meeting know there are no obligations to put money in the basket. It's the members of my home group who are responsible for keeping the meeting going, and not all can contribute money. We stress that contributions can be made in other ways and be just as important or more so. Contributions of time are valued. Serving as secretary, making coffee, wiping tables, and other group service positions are all forms of being self-supporting. All contributions, however, ought to be voluntary. I hate to hear that train run. If someone doesn't put money in the basket, we accept that we will find other ways to contribute. Different AA groups define self-support in different ways. A group may collect money only for self-support, rent, coffee, literature for newcomers. Some groups are simply too small, too new, or too unstable to contribute money. But most groups who see the role of self-support as the larger picture are more likely to support their local intergroup, central office, general service, and area activities. Even if it has to be small, they understand that all levels of AA must be self-supporting. Some groups have found that they have plenty of money in the kitty to cover the expenses and support the requested services, but no one steps up to do the chores. I don't know about you, but I see more and more apathy in the groups that I attend. I need to express my gratitude by donating my time and my talents. My local inner group has enough money to carry the message, but not enough manpower to put these funds to use, or even enough volunteers to man the phone hours. I owe AA a debt of gratitude worth much more than the $2 I may put in a basket when it comes around. I've been involved in the inner group as well as general service and find that it's easy to say I'm doing my part. Unfortunately, that feeling comes from looking at half the facts. When I start to become upset over the lack of members willing to actively serve our fellowship, I need to start looking at my part in the process. Am I presenting the positive picture of what service work can do for my sobriety? Have I shared that in meetings when appropriate? And how about with my sponsees? My sponsor believed in gratitude as long as it was linked to action. In fact, the most often quoted in my first home group was that gratitude was an action word. And into action meant I accepted responsibility to give back what I had been freely given. The living examples I saw showed me that AA worked, and this supported another common saying heard around the tables. If you want what I have, do what I do. I wasn't surprised to see that the dictionary definition of gratitude is a feeling of being thankful for something for someone is doing. Being in an appointed place on time and doing the work that's asked of me was a beginning. It was a sure cure for my self-pity, self-centeredness, self-sufficiency, and selfishness. Whether it was just pouring coffee in my home group or going on a 12-step call, I entered a new pattern of thinking. I thought not only about myself, but also about others. A picture of unity began to form. The smile from my face began to travel to my heart. No matter how bad the day, I learned to feel grateful in the moment. In the end, it all boils down to me and you. It's useless to study the problem if we're not willing to live in the solution. I need to make sure I stress service work to all my sponsees. I need to try to go to service meetings, but not alone. It's better to bring someone who's new to service, but any old-timer will do in a pinch. I need to present service work as fun, not only as a chore or a necessary evil. I need to learn to strive to live the traditions every day, all the time, not just talk about them. You know, it's hard to talk about the seventh tradition at the group level without touching on personal responsibility. For as each of us practice the tradition, it's only going to be as strong as we carry it in our group. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who is out there suffering. We do this through personal contact and shared experience. We also help this new member by supporting many other services that he and she will need as they begin their walk of sobriety. We use the responsibility pledge when we say that we're responsible for seeing the hand of AA would always be there, but it will only continue to be there if we continue to support it. The principle of voluntary contribution is very important to me. I didn't serve on the finance committee, but it's always been important. I'm thinking about giving my home group a set amount of money at the beginning of each month, a set contribution that's not contingent on how many meetings I attend. You know, I pay my mortgage every month, whether I'm home or not. I pay for my hotel room, and I have spent no time in my hotel room. But by golly, I want that hotel room there when I need it. Why don't we treat our home groups the same way? So in the face of growing expenses, our group leaders bravely and proudly stand before the group and proclaim to the world that we're self-supporting, that no outside financial aid is solicited or accepted, and that our members are small and they take care of by voluntary contributions at each meeting. Then they may say, visitors, please don't contribute it. And so the visitors depart later in complete ignorance of the fact that the local secretary has now hastily called a meeting of a few of the steadfast members to inform them that the evening's collection was short the amount that they needed for the cost of the meeting. These steadfast members who have already put their money in the collection calmly and quietly make up the deficit, thankful that they've enjoyed another evening of sobriety, which, even counting the extra donation, is far less costly than an evening of drinking. Unconsciously, they have added to their insurance that another evening of drinking is extremely unlikely. Another group happily departs the meeting as soon as they've had their coffee. Those members never visit another meeting, but religiously, once a week, set aside an evening to attend their own group. Having done so, they close the book for another week. They've done their duty. They've attended a meeting, and when the basket was passed, they carefully put their money in. For the balance of the week, they will not be disturbed, no 12-step work, because they have carefully refrained from divulging their telephone numbers. AA is a great thing, and they're sober. Then there's that group of people who are always the last to leave the meeting, who are deriving so much good and so much happiness from AA that they prefer an AA meeting to any other way. That's 19 minutes, sorry. Then there's the group that are deriving so much good and so much happiness from AA that they prefer meetings to any other way of spending an evening. They make it a point to meet and talk with newcomers at the meeting, obtain their phone numbers, and call them during the week. They quietly drop their money into the basket at every meeting and nearly always remember how much cheaper it is than a pint or a fifth. They seek out the leaders after the meeting. They thank them and tell them what a good meeting it was. These are the backbone of AA. This is not an attempt to tell you what to do or make suggestions or take someone else's inventory. Rather, it's just the idea that we receive more benefits from our participation in all AA activities as we give more of our time and ourselves to this program, morally, spiritually, physically, as well as materially. It's suggested that groups are successful as long as the participants allow it to be, and a reminder that we in AA strive for the greatest good for the greatest number. Let's fairly admit that the group expenses are the responsibility of every alcoholic in the group, and that all of us should honestly try to do our share. Let's go beyond the expenses, and each of us bear a share of the little tasks of operation where necessary, putting the chairs and tables back, cleaning up after meetings, and offering to serve on the various committees appointed to attend the mechanics of service work. Let's be thankful that we have companionship and fellowship from these meetings, thankful that we have the blessings of sobriety, and humbly grateful for the happiness and serenity offered to every person who's willing to accept the principles of this program. Thank you.